Now it gives me great pleasure to introduce Jill F. from the UK to share for Al-Anon. Hello, Jill.
Thank you. Hello. My name's Jill. And I'm a very grateful member of Al-Anon. Hi. And I'm here today to share my experience, strength and hope with you. And so just to say that I'm speaking for myself, not as Al-Anon as a whole. As this is the London primary purpose, I thought I would mention Al-Anon's primary purpose. And it says, Al-Anon has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps, by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics, and by giving understanding and encouragement to the alcoholic. So that's our primary purpose, as I see it. Also, the other thing that just struck me as I was listening to the traditions being read out, one of Al-Anon's, in tradition 6 of Al-Anon, where it gets to the part where it says, "Less problems of money, property and prestige divert us," we say, "from our primary spiritual aim. Although a separate entity, we should always cooperate with Alcoholics Anonymous," which is why I'm here. I'm not quite sure where I should start, really. I suppose from the beginning of coming to Al-Anon. I was ordered to an Al-Anon meeting by my ex-partner's psychiatrist, who obviously, being an experienced man, could see that I needed to get some help. And I was very angry and very resentful because I felt that there hadn't been anywhere for me to get any help. At that time, my partner had 21 professional people working with him in his life, and I felt alone. And I went to this meeting and I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I was so relieved. I couldn't believe that other people were living the same life as me. And that was the start of coming back to reality, and to the start of my recovery, that very first meeting. I listened and I cried, and they told me that I was powerless. And at first I didn't really like that idea. It reminded me of submission. And I'd had some experiences in my childhood, and I wasn't too keen on submitting to anything. And but the people in that room were wonderful. I'd never met people like it before. They had this air around them, and I thought, I don't know what that is that woman's got over there, but I'd like some of that. And I realise now it was serenity. And so I kind of started to think it looked hopeful. And I started to think maybe I could think about this powerlessness. Unfortunately for me, this psychiatrist, this was a long time ago now, and he took me into the group room of the detox that my partner was at, and on the board was step 1, and he explained to me about the phenomena of craving and the obsession of the mind, and I knew straight away what I'd been thinking, that my partner was an alcoholic, was true. Because that's what I saw. I saw that when he started, he couldn't stop. And I saw that it came before everything else. And I could see the obsession. I had to look for the similarities. And I had a craving for him. And I had an obsession, which was him and his drinking and where he was and what he was doing and who he was with. And somewhere in that journey, on the way to that first meeting, I'd lost myself. And I'd lost my self-esteem and often my self-respect. And I had no idea that I'd affected my family as well because of my reaction to the alcoholic in my life. And so listening at meetings, at first it was a big shock. I thought I'd been doing the right thing. But of course, what I'd been doing was enabling. And I wondered why I always ended up in trouble just after saying I was only trying to help. And I was a bit of a chronic helper. And I'm still working on that, actually. And I find that really difficult. I seem to have this autopilot to kind of jump in and say, what can I do, you know? And I think sometimes I've irritated people and I've got in the way. And I do it sometimes in my job. I have a business now, and I go to the flower market in the mornings and I pay for a porter, and I'm probably the only person who helps the porter carry the boxes out. And I know that it gets on his nerves, and I have to resist the temptation to show him how to load the van, and I trust that his experience, he knows best. And so that's usually very early in the morning, about 5 o'clock. So that starts me off with my humbling experience for the day. When he looks at me as if to say, you're doing it again. Anyway, so I started to understand this powerlessness, and but it took me a long, long time to admit my life had become unmanageable. Even though everything was pointing at that, I felt that I was a manager and I could manage anything. And I had all the plates spinning and I was going nuts. And I thought I was doing really well. But people around me were saying things, you know, like, you look really stressed. Stressed? I'm not stressed. I've got a lot on, you know. I've got a lot to do. Of course I look a bit like that. But of course I have thousands of things to do. And I was do, 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 do. And in amongst that, I was you, 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 you. And I hadn't ever stopped to look at myself, to think about myself, or to sit with my feelings and think about how I felt. And I didn't have any feelings except anger. I knew I had anger when I came into Al-Anon, but I could tell you how he felt and what he needed, but not myself. And fortunately for me, those Al-Anons, they're something else. They're absolutely fabulous. They're like a little bomb squad. They come along very, very gently and slowly, and they start to snip away. and I learned to detach. And they helped me because they explained things to me and they shared their experience and their strength and their hope with me. And I started to realise that I could do some of these things. So my partner started drinking again after about 3 months, and I was devastated, and I didn't have enough of the programme, and I went absolutely berserk, and I did my usual shaming and blaming, and things just got worse and worse. But I carried on going to Al-Anon and reading the literature, and there's some absolutely amazing literature in Al-Anon, and there are some wonderful, wonderful books. And I immersed myself in all this stuff. I mean, the Book of Daily Readings, I didn't read them on a daily basis. I just kept reading the book over and over and over again because I knew that this was what I needed. And I came to believe, gradually, I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, because what I'd been doing was insane. I'd been trying to control somebody else's drinking. And anybody who's even thinking about that right now, I'm sure some people are, have a feeling some people might be, it's useless to lay out a path for someone else to follow. I have found. And I was quite poorly, I think, really. I should have afforded myself a nervous breakdown, but that would have meant letting go of control, and I don't do that very easily. I like to hang on in there and keep thinking that I can somewhere in my reserves find another way. And I often share at meetings that when I came to Al-Anon, I was on plan 397B of how I was going to stop him drinking. And I was writing a book sometimes called Plots to Kill. And so it was a slow process for me, and I'm a slow learner. And I like to go back over things. And I'm still learning, and that's why I'm here today. I learn something every time I go to a meeting, and I learn something every time I hear somebody share. My partner didn't want this program, and I could sit here for hours, tell you about the horror stories. And I did have some very unpleasant experiences, and I had to use the courts and the police sometimes as my higher power. And it was an Al-Anon member actually that said to me, "Why are you trying to manage this? That's called breaking the law, and that's what it's there for." And I thought, oh yes, maybe I could ask for some help. And so I found help in lots of places, not just in Al-Anon and in the meetings and from the other members. It helped me open my mind and look for help anywhere I could get it. And that's what I did. As I say, it's a long story, and after my partner's, I think, third rehab, I made a decision that I didn't want him to come back. And he seemed happy with that at the time, and he said that he understood, but I don't think he was being honest. And he stalked me for a couple of years, and as I was getting better and better and my life was becoming more manageable, and I started to go to college, and then I got myself a job and stuff like that, I think he became more and more resentful, and so I had some quite unpleasant experiences. But all through that, I felt different. I now felt that there was a higher power in my life. And even when I used to open the front door faced with this insanity of someone who was drunk and had taken lots and lots of prescribed medication and some phoning with some street drugs, whatever, I had a lunatic there. And this program helped me have some compassion, and I could see the insanity. And I tried to separate that person from the illness. But it's very hard watching somebody you love kill themselves with alcohol or drugs or both. And I needed to be with people who understood how I felt. And I needed some compassion for myself. And that's what I learned in these rooms. Years later, my son, who'd left home for a while and gone to live with a girlfriend, and that relationship had gone bandy, which I could see coming, he came back to live with me, not for very long. I started to recognise some familiar behaviours, and I'd learned in Al-Anon to keep my mouth shut, mind my own business, but I knew that I wasn't going to do any more enabling. And one day I challenged him over a simple domestic issue, something like, can you pick up your smelly socks please? And he punched a hole in the wall behind my head, and then I saw it's back. And I thought, oh dear, I can't live with this again. I didn't work my program right at that moment. I lost it, and I chucked him out the house. And while he was outside the front door, I packed his suitcase and I threw it out the door at him. And I went back into the house and I was raging. And I felt angry with God. I felt angry with myself. I couldn't believe how I hadn't seen this coming. But even all the times I'd listened in Al-Anon about the family illness, and I was faced with it again. Later on that evening, he phoned me from his mobile, from a friend's car, and he said, I'm really sorry, Mum. And I said, yes, so am I. I'm really sorry that I reacted like that. And he said, I'll be back later. And I said, no, you won't. I said, I am sorry, but I can't go down that road again. And I recognise your illness, and you can get help. But I can't help you, but I know some people who can. And if you want that, I'll be there for you. This is where I always cry. Excuse me. I had to let go again. That was a different experience with my child. And I was so frightened. I kept praying to God to help me to find the strength to say no to him. And I used to shut the front door in his face and think, tonight he's going to die and it'll be all your fault. And then the Al-Anon would kick in and say, oh no, it isn't. He has choices. And I'd taken him to his first NA meeting, and then I left him there, because I learned in Al-Anon that you do something once and then let go. Twice, you're trying to put your will on it. Three times is insanity. And I try applying that every day. My son's 3.5 years clean and sober. Thank you, AA. I'm very, very grateful to this fellowship. And that's just wonderful. I didn't think that was going to happen that night. or quite a few nights after that, I can tell you, but it did. It really brought me to my knees again, that experience, and I'd stopped going to Al-Anon for a while. In fact, I felt quite angry towards Al-Anon. I thought, if I hadn't have had so much compassion, I might have bloody left that relationship earlier. That was the madness. And maybe I wouldn't have had so much insanity, and maybe I wouldn't have stayed around long enough for him to have done enough things to me to have filled him with even more shame and guilt. And that was the kind of way that I was thinking. And for this stuff with my son, I thought, I've got to get back to Al-Anon. And I walked through the doors. It was like I'd never stopped being there. I was met with the same warmth and kindness. I'd moved away as I was in a new area. But as soon as I walked back in that room, it was exactly the same. I felt the same warmth and loving kindness that I've always had every time I've gone into an Al-Anon meeting. And I've moved a couple of times because I needed to escape. And I'd had to change addresses. Everything was still the same, and I thought, I'm going to get a sponsor, and I did that, and I tried my work in the steps to the best of my ability at that time, and things got better, much, much better, and I got involved, and because I wasn't in a constant state of crisis, going from one crisis to another, to another, to another, I was able to start settling down, and prayer and meditation came into my life. But I'm here today to talk about step 10 and 11. Step 10 says that I continued to take personal inventory, so that tells me straight away that I'm not going to be perfect by working the steps, that life's going to happen. And I need to continue to apply what I've learned in the steps leading up to this. And that's a wonderful thing. And what I've got at home in my house, where I put the kettle on and I make the tea, I open the cupboard right in front of me, and I've got step 10 there to remind me. And also, I've got a mirror. And when I open that door and I see step 10, I'm also reminded that I am my problem. And it helps me remind myself to take a look at myself. I'd made amends to my children. I'd made amends to my son, actually, before he got cleaned up and sober. And he went into denial. He was sort of saying, you didn't do anything, blah, blah, blah. And I had to say to him, please, will you just please listen to what I've got to say and let me know that you can hear me. That's all I want to know. And that'll do. And he said, okay, then. And we both cried. And he made amends to me a few months ago. And boy, how it works. It was just fantastic. And I thought I knew everything that had gone on, but of course I was in the dark about lots of things. Sorry about that. It was a wonderful thing. And but listening to him brought up a few new problems for me. I started to look at myself and think maybe there was some more work to do. And I went to a speaker convention in Scotland, and I heard this woman share, and I thought, I want some of that. And she was talking about the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remembered reading the Big Book when my partner was drunk, actually. He was laying there snoring, and I was reading the Big Book, and I was desperately trying to find him in there. And then, and I was really confused about all the descriptions about the sort of types. And he seemed to go from one to another and back again. And but I read to the family afterwards and to the wives. And I was a bit confused about the wives. I thought, don't sound like this is written by a wife, but I was a bit, that didn't help very much. But to the family afterwards, I found that was really wonderful, and I thought, I'm going to go back and take another look at that big book, actually, because over the years, I hadn't realised, but I kind of stopped using the stuff that I'd learned in those very early days. I just kind of assumed that I knew it, and that somehow that was being passed on to the people that I was sponsoring and or sharing with. And so that was really wonderful, and I thought I'm gonna do some more work, and that's been really good for me. And I read that I don't know if I should say this, the Joe McHugh book, and fell in love with him on the DVDs. And although I've been told that he's definitely an alcoholic, so maybe I'd rethink about that. And that's been really good for my growth, and that's really helped me. And on step 11, how's the time coming on? That's gone quick. It says sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact, and I was really ready to do that because in inventory in myself in Al-Anon, I'd also looked for the good things about me, and it helped me look at my creativity and laughing, smiling and happiness and things like that. And and so I settled down a bit, and my mind was starting to open up. And I thought, well, I've been talking about this prayer and meditation for some time, but I think what I do is I look around for someone who can teach me. Maybe I'll ask for some help. Only took about 15 years. And I found a meditation teacher, and that was really wonderful. She was she wasn't from any particular train of thought of meditation. She was more eclectic and taught us lots and lots of different ways of being able to meditate. And because I'm absolutely great when I'm in a quiet room alone and it's peaceful, but there's always life happening, isn't there, you know. And sometimes we'd sit in our meditation group. I found that really powerful, by the way, as well. Group meditation, wow. The group consciousness of that room, and God, everybody's group consciousness of God in the room, is a very powerful experience. And even with kids outside kicking a ball against the wall, she taught us that you shouldn't try and fight it. And and I suppose that was like detachment for me. And I thought, yeah, I can do that. I know about detachment because I've been doing that in Al-Anon. And I thought, yeah, that's a ball against the wall with some children. Isn't that lovely? And then got back to what I was meant to be doing. And I found that really helped, rather than starting to think, that's irritating me, how can I stop them? It's like back to the drinking. And I found that really helped me. Going for the group, she gave me this, actually, and I'd just like to read this. And it said, that the conscious mind is the tip of an iceberg. The unconscious lies beneath that, and beneath that lies the level of consciousness of which we are all joined, the universal consciousness. What happens in meditation is that we sink into different levels of mind, experiencing a sense of timeliness, feeling deep and peaceful at other times. The conscious mind is very active and every effort is needed to concentrate. And I needed to concentrate. I needed to shut some of this chatter out of my head. And so she taught us techniques for that. And what I was amazed at, though, was that the guided meditations, instantly I was able to go with them because I had a higher power. I just took God's hand and trusted that wherever this was going to take me, I was going to be okay. And the very first guided meditation, she took us to a pyramid. And I went inside this pyramid and I started to panic. I thought, how am I going to get out? I don't want to get trapped. I know about trapped. I know about being taken hostage. How am I going to get out of here? And it brought up all this stuff. But I took myself back outside and I held my higher power's hand and I said, come with me, God. And he did. And I went back in and I was able to experience the whole thing. And it was amazing. I was in the pyramid. I went into a healing pool. I was dragged down and then out to space. And I could hear choirs singing. And I thought, shit, what is this? I'm really going mad now. Has someone put some drugs in my tea? And I was actually frightened to share about this at the end of the meditation because I thought they're all going to think I am round the bend. And I had learned in Al-Anon that it's not always wise to share everything that you're thinking. And I thought, shall I say about this or not? And she really encouraged me to share with everybody what had happened, so I did. And I went through this whole thing, which took about 20 minutes, and I could feel that there were some people in the room getting quite resentful, because apparently they've been going for 5 years and never seen a thing. And I felt guilty. What I've noticed is that my Al-Anon friends have come along to meditation and have been to that group with me, don't seem to have any trouble. And I think that for me, that's allowing myself to be in God and God in me. And that's what I discovered through this wonderful fellowship. I'd looked around at loads and loads of religions and Al-Anon said, take what you like and leave the rest. And that's what I did. I took the bits that I liked from all different sources and that's okay. And I'd looked at some Buddhism and one day I really wanted to be a Hindu. You know, I'd been to this temple and it was fantastic and I loved everything. And I sat, they invited me warmly into their service and I sat on the floor and all these little children came and sat around me and I thought, I'm on cloud nine. I want to be here. I'm going to be a Hindu. And then all of a sudden I realised that all the men were sitting at the front and all the women were sitting at the back. And I thought, bollocks. Oh. So I've had a stick with what my program tells me, that I can take what I like and leave the rest. And I've discovered very recently that God is inside of me and inside of you. And before you all got here today, this was just a room and there was no love in it, but there is now because I can feel it. And you've brought that because that's coming from inside you. And that's what's coming from inside me right now. And I know that's God. And I can feel it. And I've felt that from everybody in here. And so So I know that's true. I know that we have God in us. I have God in me. And all I need to do is step out of the way sometimes and let it come out. And I can show that to people. I can express my love to people. I can be generous and warm and kind. And if you want to know if I've got any recovery, ask my family. I'd like to say I've got all these years of experience, etc., etc., but this is a daily program for me, and it's one day at a time. And some days I can lose it. And I was reading a book recently my son bought me. I never ever thought he'd buy me any of that sort of literature. And it was about this guy who'd sat in temples. He'd sat on the Ganges for 7 years. He lived in a cave for 5. And he was really enlightened. And then he had a family function. And so he flew to his hometown in his monk's robes, that he'd become a monk by now. And he went to Elizabeth Arden on Fifth Avenue, and his sister-in-law that he was waiting to meet was late, and he said that in 10 minutes he lost it. All those years of sitting in the cave. He was all right in the cave, and I'm all right in the cave, you know, but I have a family, and we have dynamics, apparently. And I think that's what they call it. And, you know, sometimes it's hard. And my partner's in recovery, and my daughter, I want to mention Alateen just quickly before I finish. I took my daughter to Alateen when she was 10 years old, and she's 19. And it's very strange when a child throws the program back at you, I can tell you. But I tell you what, it makes me look at myself and it helps me work it. And I'm grateful that she inventories me sometimes. And I've learned not to take offense to those things and to listen, because it's usually the truth is somewhere in the middle. So she's in the middle, really. And it's very painful when people you love don't love each other. And so I need to stay focused, and I need God to help me with that. And I need all my wonderful Al-Anon friends that I can see over there smiling at me. And I need my family, you know, I love my family. And so I want to make the effort to do the best I can. So thank you.
Okay, then.